Previously on Colors.
Lena Sun is a Washington Post reporter on the national desk focusing on health.
I was the reporter leading our COVID coverage at the start of the pandemic, starting January 8th of 2020.
She writes, "My mom died while I was covering COVID. It changed my views on grief."
No one was at her side when she died, to hold her hand, to see her, to know that she was no longer here on this earth.
That painful period was punctuated by a rising wave of Asian hate.
As a reporter, I was absolutely aware of it. And as a Chinese American with the face that I have, I was absolutely aware of it. And I was so angry.
A complex story of healing, resilience, and understanding.
Coming up in this episode of Colors.
Darian Akins is an African-American diplomat, and he's the State Department's diplomat in residence for the District of Columbia metro area.
I've often had students ask me, or parents ask me, or foreign nationals ask me, why am I so proud of serving the United States? And I said, because we are unique in the world.
Being a diplomat was not always his plan.
I was completely unfamiliar with the Foreign Service until I served as a Peace Corps volunteer and actually met a Foreign Service officer.
But he's all in now, especially when it comes to attracting minorities.
Because we need diverse perspectives within the Department of State.
That's coming up in this episode of Colors.
Simmering racial tensions.
Segregation now and tomorrow and forever.
Fighting injustice.
I have a dream.
Conflict looming. Brutality exposed.
I can't breathe. I can't breathe.
The search for solutions starts here.
From WTOP in Washington, D.C.,
this is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
When you think of the State Department and its representatives, what image comes to mind? Often, it's not the image of a minority, an African American or an Asian or a Latino, but the State Department appears to be trying to change that. They have a program called the Diplomats in Residence, and they are career Foreign Service officers and specialists located throughout the U.S. who are providing guidance on careers and internships and fellowships for students in the communities where they serve. And we have the diplomat in residence for the District of Columbia with us today. His name is Darian Akins. And he will quibble, he'll tell you that himself, about this idea that they're there to recruit. But we'll let him tell a story and what he's there to do and how his career is gone and what's going on now with that. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today. You have a very interesting career path, and it's really interesting the moment you're in, we're in, the spot you're in right now. So I know you're in the Foreign Service, and I know that you have a very interesting appointment right now, but just give us a moment. I'll get into that appointment in a minute. But just give us a little background about your career and how you got to where you are.
Well, I came to the Foreign Service by a rather circuitous route. Originally, after graduating from Texas A&M University in political science, I was an educator, and I did that for a year. And then I moved on to become a Peace Corps volunteer. And during the time I was serving as a Peace Corps volunteer, I met a Foreign Service officer who, after he got to know me, thought I would make a good Foreign Service officer and encouraged me to consider the career. But I was still kind of young, still full of vim and vigor, and didn't really think about it. But he did plant a seed. And then a few years later, when I was working in Japan, I decided to apply. It sounded, after I considered all of the experiences that I had, that the Foreign Service seemed to be a good fit for an eventual career.
One of the things that's very important to note about your decision to do that is that I've spoken with Gina Abercrombie,
Winstanley?
Winstanley, yes.
Yes.
And also Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield and a couple of other people as well, mm-hmm. about African-Americans being involved in the Foreign Service, people of color, minorities being involved in the Foreign Service. Was that a part of your calculus?
No, never. I mean, as I said, not unlike many people, I was completely unfamiliar with the Foreign Service until I served as a Peace Corps volunteer and actually met a Foreign Service officer. And not only, you know, Foreign Service, I was introduced to a number of careers about which I'd never been familiar, never heard of until I served as a Peace Corps volunteer. And that started that opened the aperture in terms of what my professional possibilities were.
So at this moment, right now, you are a diplomat in residence in the D.C. metro area, assigned, obviously, by the State Department. I had never heard of that. And I'm wondering what exactly it is. I mean, I know what it is now, but I'd like you to explain it to our audience. What exactly is that post?
So many people will say we're a recruiter. I would quibble with that definition. So I have a four-state region, Washington, D.C., Delaware, West Virginia, and Maryland. And I like to say I am responsible for encouraging and inspiring people, mostly students and mid-career professionals, to consider a career in international affairs, most specifically the Foreign Service. And so we talk about the various programs that we have available to facilitate their entry into the Foreign Service or provide the experiences that we're looking for in the Foreign Service. So I will discuss with individuals opportunities such as our paid internship program, the fellowships program, Wrangell and Pickering and Payne, for example. But in terms of what we do as diplomats in residence, there are 16 of us around the country, soon to be 17. We're mostly affiliated with universities. In my case, I am actually affiliated with the Ralph J. Bunche International Affairs Center at Howard University, where I coordinate and work closely with the director of that program, the center, as well as the directors of the Pickering, Wrangell, and Payne fellowships, because Howard University is our implementing partners throughout the country for those programs. And so I work very closely with them.
So how is it that you present the opportunities that are available in the State Department to these people? What is it that you say? What is it that you share with them as you're presenting this to them?
Quite often it is just making them familiar with the Foreign Service and that we have a number of careers. Many people are not familiar with the Foreign Service and they're not familiar with the career tracks that we have. So for example, you know, you can be a political officer, economic officer, consular officer, public diplomacy officer, management officer. And then that's on just one side of the Foreign Service. On the other side, there are specialist opportunities like IT specialists and medical specialists. And so I first make them aware of those opportunities. And then they will invariably ask me, well, what do I have to do to become qualified, or what's the criteria? And I explain that the basic criteria is be a U.S. citizen and be able to get a top secret clearance. But other than that, it's looking at your experience. And so that's when I explain about the paid internship programs that we have, the fellowship programs that we have, exchange programs that help facilitate entry or give them that experience that they would that we would be looking for in terms of leadership skills, communication skills, interpersonal skills, how they can develop those skill sets and professionally develop them. And so one of the ways is through our internship program that is now paid, where we take students and we look at 26 different skill sets that they can identify and say, that's a skill set I want to learn. Then if they're selected, we actually assist them in professionally developing them themselves to become proficient in that area. And so that is something that we're introducing the department to them while also helping them develop as a professional.
One of the things that you just made me think about while we were talking has basically brought up another question in my head. You mentioned the top secret clearance, and you also mentioned most folks don't know what, a lot of people, I should say, aren't familiar with what the Foreign Service does. But I think a lot of people know that there is a difference between the Foreign Service and the Central Intelligence Agency and all of these intelligence agencies. So why is a top secret clearance necessary for this kind of work?
That just simply is what's required for us because of the type of information that we are sometimes required to handle. That is part of the process, that people have to be able to get a top secret clearance so that they can be able to be cleared to access that information.
And that's not really an easy thing. Sometimes, you know, having worked for the State Department myself for about 6 years as a contractor, getting a secret clearance was, you know, a very interesting process. But a top secret clearance is there are a bunch of more steps in there, correct?
Not particularly. No. For the most part, it's the same. It's the same process, and it's not anything that people have to fear. Primarily what they would want to understand is that we're looking at your background to make sure that we're able to you're able to serve effectively in that position. Mm-hmm. And we want to just make sure that there is nothing that you have to be concerned about, but that we have to be concerned about. But it's not something that I would tell people that they need to be concerned about.
All right. So how has this kind of work, the Foreign Service, how has that impacted your life since you got out of the Peace Corps and jumped into this career? How's it benefited? What are the ups and what are the downs? Just how's it impacted your life?
I have enjoyed serving the country, particularly. And I think the best way that I can explain it is I've often had students ask me or parents ask me or, foreign nationals ask me, why am I so proud of serving the United States? And I said, because we are unique in the world, where that we bring people from all around the world and we become Americans. And that is very fundamentally different from many of the countries around the world who look at what is my blood or where do I specifically come from? And Americans are different in the sense that we are Americans because we have a U.S. Constitution that says that we are Americans. And that actually is unique around the world. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to discuss that uniqueness about America to others around the world. I've had challenging positions, of course, but since it's always in service to the country, I've always found it to be fulfilling.
There are a number of people that I've spoken to who have said that being a Black diplomat at the U.S. in the U.S. Foreign Services has not always been an easy path, has not always been the work that they signed up for. How do you address that?
I wouldn't say that it's not the work I've signed up for. I mean, there are always going to be challenges in any professional environment. But one of the benefits is that we have very good mentors and sponsors, or at least I have, and many of the people that I know have very strong sponsors and mentors who help guide us in our career. There are a number of positions that I never would have secured had I not had individuals more senior to me sponsor me, mentor me, and explain, you know, here is the path forward to secure that position or at least be competitive for that position. And sometimes that's, you want to make sure that you specialize in a particular area, or maybe think about what languages you want to acquire, or which skill sets, even once you join the Foreign Service, what sorts of skill sets do you want to focus on, such as giving speeches, speaking, public speaking, building your network within the department. So long as you do that, you know, there are always professional challenges in any workplace, but if you find and identify those sponsors and mentors, or they find and identify you, it can be a very rewarding career.
Do you get the sense that African-Americans being a part of the Foreign Service, there are more opportunities, better opportunities now? Why is now a good time for African-Americans to join the Foreign Service?
Because we need diverse perspectives within the Department of State. I have served on country teams around the world, and what I would not like to see is the decisions are made quickly because we suffer from groupthink, meaning I don't want that to happen. I want us to have very robust conversations about the issues that we face, and we have the discussion from A to Z. And that requires people to come with unique perspectives. And by that, I mean, for example, being an African-American male, coming from a small rural town, which is where I was born, I come with unique perspectives. And I offer those perspectives as we discuss the issues and challenges that the country faces when I'm sitting on that country team. And the important thing is not only being at that table, we need the leadership of individuals like African-Americans at the table, but more importantly, we also need them to be willing to share their perspectives, because it's not about us being right or wrong. It's about contributing to a process that makes effective foreign policy. And so long as we understand that, we can be leaders who assist the country in advancing U.S. foreign policy.
Where are some of the places you've served, and maybe did you have a favorite?
Every place is unique. So I wouldn't say that I have a favorite, but I have served in Malaysia, India, Afghanistan, Australia, Indonesia, Germany, and this is my second time serving in Washington, D.C. And I wouldn't say that I have a favorite, but I will say one of the favorite experiences that I did have was in Malaysia, in that Malaysians were very open to exposing their culture, their language, and their country. And so that was a country where I got to travel quite a bit and meet a lot of people, just because they would say, hey, come in, let's have coffee in this city, or let's have dinner in this city. And they were just simply trying to introduce Malaysia and its culture and its food. So I very much enjoy that. But I've enjoyed every country that I've ever worked in. Every place is unique, and every place has things that I take away that make me a better Foreign Service officer and a better representative for the American people.
Even Afghanistan.
Afghanistan, and just to give you an example, I remember we spent a lot of time on the compound. We didn't have the opportunity to go off the embassy compound very often. And I remember that our Afghan counterparts that we worked with on a daily basis, what we call the local staff, they would have a function for us, sometimes bringing their families onto the compound so that we could interact and learn about Afghan cuisine and just be able to interact with not only our staff, but their families. And that was a very unique experience. And it speaks to the kind of camaraderie that we develop when we serve overseas in these posts.
You know, I spent a little bit of time in Afghanistan myself, and I'm not sure what years you were there, but for me,
2008 to 2009.
Right. I think there was probably a little bit of intersection there at the end there, because 2009, 2010, when I was able to, basically, I went there as in, embedded with the Air Force as a journalist on a couple of occasions, 2006 and 2009-10. And yeah, it was a very interesting place. And I see exactly what you're saying about the ability to engage on the cultural front. So what do you bring from those varied experiences in these different places to this job that you're doing now?
Well, definitely in this position, it's a culmination of all of those experiences. And because individuals who are thinking about joining the Foreign Service, I can discuss from my own personal perspective and my own personal experiences and explain or be able to answer their questions effectively. Sometimes people are concerned about, what about my family? And I explain, my family has gone to every single post I've ever served, except Afghanistan, of course. And it has been a unique experience for my son, who, of course, originally he said, I was never asked about this adventure, but he appreciates the education, the global education that he has. And I mean that academically as well as experientially, that now as he's, you know, gotten older and he's now in university, he talks about how he appreciates that experience and his ability to know people from around the world. His friends are global, and he appreciates that. And so I talk about these experiences that my family has had and what it's like, so that people who are thinking about a career in the Foreign Service understand that you're coming into a family that's going to help to bring you along, to develop you, and also take care of your family as well as you embark upon that career or profession.
Is there a moment or a time that stands out more than any other time in your mind? I know you've said that you don't really have a favorite place or time, but is there any experience that stands out, good or bad, in your mind that you always remember about your time abroad?
Perhaps the one I would point to is, I remember this vividly. I was serving in Australia, and I often will go out and speak to students, high school students and university students. And as I was doing this in Australia, I was hearing back from the university students that they didn't understand why I was there. They felt like America was a spent power and that China was the future. And they shared this with me directly. And I was, of course, a bit concerned about this view. And I went to my boss and I explained that, here's what I'm hearing from university students. And he said, well, what do you think we should do about it? Do you have an idea? Do you have a plan? And I said, actually, I do. I think we should start an internship program where Australian university students can come work in the consulate side by side with us as we, as Americans and Australians, work together on the bilateral issues that both our countries face, so that they can see how important this relationship is and how deep this relationship is. And we started an internship program. And for the first cohort, we received 96 applications for 4 slots. That program still runs to this day, 13 years later. And it has started to help us to turn the tide about America's place and its relationship with Australia. And so that's one that I look at and say, here's where we really did make a difference and how we can make a difference. And I bring that experience because I was challenged when I was in Germany, that a colleague of mine said, you know, Darian, you often will speak to students when you're serving overseas. How about you come home and you do that here? And so one of the ways that I could do that was through the Diplomat in Residence program, where I can speak to not only students, but I can speak to mid-career professionals about the opportunities that are available in the Foreign Service and the careers that are available in the Foreign Service, and make them aware of the opportunities that exist that I did not know existed until I joined the Peace Corps.
Yeah, that is a very, very interesting look back and context that you present. You know, you can change. What I got from that is that you can change situations that are far greater than your comprehension. Oftentimes, I'm speaking of these students, you know, when you address an issue like that, you know, people present that to you instead of just kind of writing some mailed in thoughts and just delivering them to your audience, applying some thought to it and applying yourself to it, you can change things that are far greater than you intended. You know, which is what it seems like you did with those remarks in Australia, you know?
And it's one of the things that I love about the Foreign Service, that while we do have a profession and a job, but within that context, you can identify problems and or issues and take them on. We have the leeway to address challenges that we see on our own. Now, of course, it requires coordination with the people we work with and our supervisors and our bosses, and sometimes Washington, D.C., often with Washington, D.C. But we have the flexibility to address the challenges that we see and try and help the country overcome certain issues and or problems. And that makes the career sincerely rewarding.
Well, congratulations and well done, Ambassador. Thank you so much for taking time to explain what you do, why you do it, how you do it. And before I go, I would like to ask you one more thing. Is there something that I haven't asked you about that you think is important that you'd like to share with us today?
Well, one thing, just I want to be clear, you're giving me a promotion. I'm not ambassador. I served as consul general in Germany. That I do want to get on the record and say that. But I think the one thing that I would like to leave people with is that, one, I want them to understand who we are as the State Department, because very often when I say I work for the Department of State, they'll say, which state? And I have to explain, well, it's the U.S. Department of State. And within that, we have the Foreign Service. So I start there. And so it really is trying to allow people to become familiar with who we are and what we do, and to provide another avenue for individuals to serve their country. This is an opportunity to serve your country. It does require mostly living and working overseas, but it is just another way in which we can help advance not only U.S. foreign policy, but help move the country forward. And so I just want people to know about that opportunity.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you for the correction. I am aware that you're not. But I have to admit, though, I've done this a few times on this program and others. People who work in your arena, who do the type of work you do, you may not have the official title as ambassador, but you know, I think it's important for people to recognize that. But I hear what you're saying, and we don't want to put false information out there. You are not a U.S. ambassador yet, so we'll go with that.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I really sincerely appreciate that.
But thank you for taking time to talk with us today. We appreciate that.
And thank you. Thank you, Mr. Green. Appreciate it.
Stay tuned for some thoughts about race in America and details about our next guest.
You're listening to Colors.
My name is Gretchen Soren. I'm African-American, and I live in Springfield Center, New York. My mother was an elementary school teacher, and my younger brother had an innate ability to draw. And I remember in the 1960s, my mother got him to draw the faces of famous African-Americans: Ida B. Wells, George Washington Carver, Charles Drew, Thurgood Marshall. He drew their faces on cardboard, and we colored them and cut them out. And my mother used them during Black History Month at school to teach the kids in Newark, New Jersey, about African-American history. I learned those stories, too, and these were stories that I didn't learn at school. I didn't realize then that African-American history was American history. The United States that we live in today is a nation that we built together. Blacks and whites, Latinx people, immigrants. Black History Month is about expanding the American story to include all of the people who have made us who we are as a nation. And it's about understanding that the struggle of people of African descent for full equality in American society has pushed our country to live up to its stated ideals. And at times that's been tough. Democracies require vigilance and constant work, and those groups who keep civil rights and voting rights on the front burner help us to maintain our democracy. And I still have all those cardboard heads that my mother and brother made years ago.
This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.
If you have any questions or comments about Colors, send us an email. You can reach us at colors@thecolorspodcast.com. That's colors@thecolorspodcast.com.
Coming up in our next episode of Colors.
His name is Tommy Ka.
I grew up in Memphis, and I lived in a neighborhood called Whitehaven for most of my childhood.
He's a globally recognized artist, and he's going to share his racial experience in the U.S. with us.
There was like this kind of weird permission my family gave me. It was like, it's okay to assimilate, that if you need to learn English, that's great. You don't have to hold on to the past and maintaining speaking Chinese with us.
That's coming up in our next episode of Colors.
That's it for this episode. Thanks, everyone, for helping us put this together. Thank you to Mike Jukaitis. Thank you, Hillary Howard. Thank you, Joel Oxley and Julia Ziegler. Thanks to Jesse Gallagher and Cosmic and Offshane for the music. And most of all, thank you for listening. And we appreciate you. And just one more thing, as always, please continue to talk to each other.
And just as important, keep listening to each other.
You can subscribe to Colors wherever you get your podcasts. This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.